We have tonight and next week to finish up our class here. And the last part of Jesus, of the gospel, I wanted to overview is I just wanted to talk about friends of Jesus. And just tonight what I want to talk about is who did Jesus choose for his friends and the people to be close with him. And so really that's what we're going to be going over tonight. It will basically, what we're going to be doing is looking at John 15, where Jesus says, you are my friends if you obey my commandments. And there's a whole dialogue in there. But we can learn some things about, not just about how to choose friends, but also how to be a friend. And that's really what we're talking about, how to be and how to choose friends that Jesus would choose. So that's really where we're at tonight. But to start out with, on a bigger picture, if we look at the sort of the social dynamic of Jesus, you can really see a few things in there. And so let's go ahead and start out here. Friends of Jesus. Now, as we look at, how do I want to frame this? In all of our lives, we're going to have different friend zones, I guess, if you want to put it that way, different circles that get closer and closer to our hearts. And Jesus had the very similar setup. So if we're going to start out with Jesus' best and closest friends, who would you say those people would be? Yeah, James and John and Peter would typically be the people that would be Jesus' most close and intimate friends. We see that, you know, for instance, on the Transfiguration, James, John, and Peter are the ones who went with him, and we see that several times, James, John, and Peter. So they were sort of Jesus' closest, most intimate friends. They're the ones he trusted, the ones at the end of the book of John, you see Peter, James, and John there, and Jesus tells Peter, tend my sheep, and when Peter says, well, what about this guy? And Jesus says, if I want him to remain until I return, what's that to you? And you know, just that idea that, you know, at the end of the book of John, it says, that was the disciple whom Jesus loved, and he wrote these things truly. And so you can kind of see that those men would be, so that's three people in Jesus' closest circle, and they were special men. And as we can see and know about the history of the in Acts, Peter and John made a significant contribution to the growth of the church. And so now, who would we say Jesus' close friends were? So we have James and John, which is basically two to three friends in his best friend circle. Who would be the close friends of Jesus? Mary, Martha, and Lazarus might fall into that category, right? You might have, Jerry? The rest of the 12 would fall into that group. So there's a few people, Mary of Magdalene, maybe Jesus' mother might fall into that category. And so you're going to have, there's Salome and then Peter's mother-in-law who he raised. You know, there's a small group of people that you're going to see. And those are the close friends. And so I would say probably 12 to 20 people. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What happened there? We'll get back on it. So, all right, yeah, so we have 2 to 3 and then maybe 12 to 20 in Jesus' close friend circle. And so then his social circle, how far would we expand that? Well, social would be people that you spend time with, that you know, but maybe you're not on an intimate basis with. And casual would be a lot broader than that. Maybe someone who, like for Jesus, in Jesus' sake, I mean, here's the way I would define it. I'll stop asking the question. So you see Jesus send out 70 people to go out in the beginning of his ministry, or kind of middle of his ministry. So I would say 70 plus would fall into that. You know, people that he's trained, that he's interacted with. They may not be his closest friends, but they are sort of that in his inner circle still. And then beyond that, the casual in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says that he appeared to 500, right? And so there's going to be this exterior thing. But the point is, as we look at ourselves, so we'd have the 70 plus and then maybe 500 plus. But as you look at it, you know, you have these different layers of friendship around him. But we need to have a method of, because, you know, the 500, Jesus may not have known him that well. He may have interacted. Maybe he healed one of them and he knew him in that sense, but, you know, they weren't as intimate. But in our lives, we can have the same sort of thing. You know, we might have a groups of 500 people that we know. For instance, there's probably, you know, 50 people I know that I went to camp with, met, or some of them I don't know, but they know me. And so they'll visit here and hey, we went to camp together. And just the other week this happened. Hey, we went to camp together. And I didn't really remember the guy. Mel probably would have, because she remembers everyone's face. But I didn't remember the guy, but he remembered me. And so if we talked enough, we'd probably say, okay, yeah, now I'm familiar with that. So that's sort of a casual thing. There are people I'm friends with, or maybe I used to be friends with, where now they're sort of in that social where I know them and I've spent time with them, but I don't spend time with them anymore. And so we can look at that, but we are all going to have that. But as we get down to the close friends and the best friends, how do we choose those? Because those people are going to have an impact on us. You know, those people we trust with information. If you think about the 12, Jesus shared a lot of information with them in Matthew 13. He said, "For you it has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom, but not to everyone." And so he shared certain things with them. He shared his heart with them and those sorts of things. And so, anyway, this just kind of gives us a concept of the social dynamic of in Jesus' life. And it's something along this line, but we see this sort of structure there. But what did Jesus, was there a process he went through to really bring certain people in close and leave some people out in the purple zone, if you will? And so that's what we're going to look at tonight. So let's go ahead and open up to John chapter 15. And really the way I want to conduct this class is more of as a discussion of this, because I think we can all sort of look at these things and benefit from discussing some of these things that Jesus says here in John chapter 15, 12 through 17. So let's go ahead and read through it, and then we'll kind of take it verse by verse. "This is my commandment, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than he lay his life down for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you slaves, for the slave does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you would go and bear fruit, and that your fruit would remain, so that whatever I ask of the Father in my name, he may give to you. This I command you, that you love one another." So as we go ahead and look at this, what does it mean when Jesus says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I love you"? So as we talk about Jesus saying, okay, these are my closest friends, and the first thing I'm going to ask of them is that they love one another like I've loved them. How did Jesus love them? What does that mean? He loved them unconditionally. Okay, say more about that.
In Jesus' case, he is our creator. And he loves his creations, and he loved them in an agape. I guess where they don't have to earn his respect or his love. He just loves them.
Okay, what are some, any other thoughts on that? You're exactly right, Cliff. And so, yeah, and I appreciate the bringing up the agape love, because I think that's a good point. Jerry?
All right. This is my commandment, that if you love one another just as I have loved you, and how much did Jesus love his creation, all mankind, everyone, even those who would have killed him. He laid his life down for him. But if any one of them had done that, would they have become, he'd become their friend. They would have had a friendship with him.
Okay.
Your question kind of leads me a little bit close, because he loved all creation. He loved everyone. He didn't want anyone to go to condemnation.
Yeah. So I would agree with you guys on that, but we have to start trimming out some because he loves all his creation. However, this is his close friends. And he's cut a lot of people out of that in order to get down to this close group of friends. So
he's kind of preparing them for what he's about to do.
Right.
He's going to die for them. And I think that what he's saying is, you need to love one another as deeply as I love you. And I'm willing to die for you.
Okay. Kyler, what was your thought?
He loves all souls, but our part is we have to live for him. And that's him demonstrating his deeds and that love to each other, that concern. You accept the person as they are, but you don't accept the deeds if the deeds are evil.
Okay. Okay, yeah, and so that sort of has that concept of agape love, not doing what's pleasant to you, but doing what's right for you. Linda, you had a thought?
Well, Jesus showed his love by putting up with everything that was dished out to him and still not sinning. So he gave his life for us, endured all things, and if we are going to be his friend, we will do what he says. That's how we love.
Right, to obey his commandments and follow his example. And so if we look at this, and he says, I want you to love me the same way I love you. And the next thing he says, I guess, is greater love has no one than this, and you lay down, than he lays that life down for his friends. And these concepts go together. I would say on the first one, how did Jesus love them? First of all, he was patient with them. You know, throughout the Gospels, what do you read is people who just don't get it. And yet, they had certain qualities that he valued. They were willing to follow his leadership. They were willing to accept correction. But what did Jesus do? And this really gets down to that agape love, is he corrected them when they needed correction, right? And that was a very loving thing that Jesus did, because it's easy to give up on people, but Jesus didn't give up on them. Even, for instance, with Peter, who denied him three times, Jesus didn't give up on Peter because he had the quality that he was looking for. So he valued the faith in them. You see Jesus encouraging them when they needed encouragement. He was an example to them because they needed an example. And ultimately, he gave his life up for them because they needed his life. And really, that's the second part is, greater love has no one than this, and you lay your life down for someone. That is sort of like the, if you're going to think of the RPMs, that's like when you tap out the tachometer, that's as much as your engine can put out. There's a lot of things less than that you can do. And what Jesus is saying is, I was willing to give everything for you, but I also gave everything less than that for you as well. If you think about a different way, you know, he laid down his life literally. But how did he lay down his life every day? You know, let's, you know, when we talk about Jesus loved them, how did he lay down his life every day? Kelly? Yeah, no, I really appreciate that, because that's one that I also appreciate about him is, you know, you see Jesus just giving, even though the people just wanted to take. They weren't trying to give back to him or appreciate him sometimes. But he gave anyway, because he had compassion on them. So, yeah, and that's one where I feel like I could do better on that, is I could do better giving when I don't feel like giving, or when I feel like I'm just being drawn dry. Anna? Yeah, no, that is an outstanding point, is every day he showed them God. And so that's a very loving thing, and that requires a lot of sacrifice and a lot of discipline, right, for Jesus to be perfect in showing them God in that way. Another thing I appreciate is Jesus didn't look at where people, he didn't look at their, he was willing to overlook the past when he saw a good heart. That's one thing I just really, you find really profound when Mary is weeping on Jesus' feet and wiping it with her tears and pouring oil on his feet. The Pharisees in the room said, if he was a prophet, he would know what kind of a woman this was that was touching him. But Jesus didn't consider that. He just considered, here is somebody who wants my forgiveness. And that was the right material. And he was willing to overlook all the other things because the heart was right. And that was, you know, very critical. So on one hand, you're willing to give the hard correction when it's needed. But on the other hand, you're willing to overlook a lot if the heart is right, if there's faith in there. And so there's two aspects of that. Any other thoughts? Serena? Yeah, no, I was thinking about that today as well. Now, that's a great thought, yeah, he loved Judas, and he kept him in there, even though he knew Judas. He saw that aspect of him, but he believed in Judas regardless of that. And so I think that is also, you know, he didn't kick Judas out because he saw the negative. He believed in Judas, even when Judas really didn't deserve that sort of belief in him. And yet Jesus gave him the chance to actually make the mistake instead of anticipating it. So great point, Serena. Any other thoughts on that? Joe?
A few weeks ago when we were talking about Lazarus, we had mentioned where we talked about how Jesus knew beforehand the outcome of that and how he was going to heal Lazarus ultimately, but he still stayed in the moment and wept with them and had compassion for them. And that kind of goes along with this too.
Yeah, and I appreciate that thought, because that also brings up the emotional situation Jesus was in there. In John 11, it talks about Jesus was deeply grieved, but that word is literally translated. It's part of the word is used to describe a horse snorting. Like, just he was snorting and angry is really the concept. He had a strong emotional reaction to that, and it said that he was troubled. That means shaking. And even with that sort of a response, you know, frustration or anger or whatever, that he didn't engage that aspect of him. He had mercy and controlled his reaction. Yeah, Vicky, did you have a thought? Okay, Joe?
Actually, I'm glad that Joe brought Lazarus' thought, because it also reminded me of before when they were saying, you know, if you were just
Yeah, I appreciate that thought. Yeah, Jesus was very understanding. And so as we look at this, we see Jesus, and it says, this is how we can be a friend. You know, one, Jesus says, I want you to treat each other that way. And also, that's what Jesus is looking for in his friends, right? That's his expectation of them when he gives them this command. He's saying, I expect my friends to love as I have loved. And so, if you want to be a friend of Jesus, if you wanted Jesus to choose you as a friend, then you would have this quality. But also, there's another aspect of this, is because we're talking about people we bring in close to us, and those people are our support. If you think about what were Peter, James, and John and the 12 to Jesus, they were his support system. If Jesus needed encouragement, he would turn to those guys for encouragement. And they were part of what he was accomplishing. So for us choosing friends, this is also something we can look for, is look for people who have the desire to love like Jesus, who have that that want of wanting to be a sincere and selfless type of a friend, someone who's going to truly love you, even when it's hard, even when it's inconvenient, even when they need to say something you don't want to hear, or they need to overlook something that you're falling short in. Choose people like that to be close to you. And so on this one is love just as I have loved. In 1 Peter 1:22, and I actually appreciate this verse in this light. It says, having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth for sincere brotherly love, love one another earnestly from a pure heart. This verse here gives us the concept that one of the reasons Jesus laid down his life for us is so that we would be capable of loving like he loved. And that's a really powerful thing as well, is he gave that command right before he died. But also, this verse says, is one of the reasons you've purified your soul by your obedience to the truth is for a sincere brotherly love. So love one another. And so, anyway, I just appreciated that verse, and it really gives us that. And so one of the things that is this would also help you to say, who you're going to choose your relationships with. So let's go ahead and take a look now at any other thoughts. Mary Martha?
Well, forgiveness and love creates unity. And if you don't have unity, you don't have strength. So for them, he's leaving them advice for the way to be unified is forgiveness and love and understanding. And that's what he did. He forgave. And he created that feeling of forgiveness through love.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that thought, Mary Martha. I think that is true. Is forgiveness and love create unity. And I really appreciate that thought. I'll probably hang on to that one and think about it a little bit. So let's go ahead and take a look at John 15, verse 14. You are my friends if you do what I command you. Here's another aspect of choosing a friend like Jesus chose a friend, is he chose people who, he said, you're my friends if you're obedient to me. And so if you're choosing friends to be in your close or your inner circle, obedience to Christ would be part of that consideration, wouldn't it? And so I want to go ahead and take a minute, and let's look at where Jesus found his friends and where he didn't find his friends. It's kind of an interesting thing, and this doesn't rule anything in or rule anything out, but it's not where you would expect, I guess, is really the thing. If you're going to say, if I just ask a question, where do you find your friends? Where do you look? So you're going to just go out, you're going to say, okay, I'm going to make a friend somewhere. What kind of places would you look? In the church? Yeah. Okay, so that's somewhere you could look, is in the church. Are you always going to find a good friend in the church? You should be able to, right? What was Jesus' experience with the religion of his day? Were those the people? Some of them befriended him, but he also had a lot of backlash from that, didn't he? And if you open up with me to John chapter 11, just be a couple pages back here, and I'll start reading in verse 47. It says, "Therefore the chief priests and the Pharisees convened a council and were saying, 'What are we doing? For this man is performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, all men will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation.' But one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to him, 'You know nothing at all, nor do you take into account that it is expedient for one man to die for the people, and that the whole nation not perish.' Now he did not say this on his own initiative, but being a high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was going to die for his nation. And not only for the nation, but in order that he might gather together into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So from that day on, they planned together to kill him." And so it's kind of an interesting thing, but in Jesus' case, some of the religious people of his day weren't very good choice. Now, on the other hand, Andrew, Peter, or at least we know Andrew, James, and John, Peter, possibly Philip, those men were also part of religion of the day, but they were following John the Baptist, right? And so it's not just about looking in the church or a church for a friend. It's about looking for faithful friends, right? And that's really what Jesus was looking for. Another example of somewhere you might look for friends would be within your family, right? Or your hometown or the school you went to or that sort of thing. But if you look in John 7:5, it says even his brothers weren't believing in him. In Mark 3:20, it said his people were saying Jesus was had lost his mind. In John 4:44, Jesus was on his way to go teach in Nazareth, and he kept saying, "A prophet is not without honor except for in his own hometown." And so even though those people might be the ones you'd think, okay, these are going to be my closest allies, the people I know, the people who know me, and they're going to be able to support me. In Jesus' case, that wasn't the situation. And so sometimes looking where you'd expect to find a friend, you may not find a friend. But on the other hand, where did Jesus find some of his friends? Let's go ahead and take a look at, because there's a few. Let me find my... this here. So where did Jesus go to find friends? Open up with me to Mark chapter 2. I'm going to start reading in verse 14. "And he passed by, he saw Levi the son of Alphaeus sitting in the tax booth, and he said to him, 'Follow me.' And he got up and followed him. And it happened that he was reclining at the table in his house, and many tax collectors and sinners were dining with the Jews and his disciples, for there were many of them. And they were following him. When the scribes of the Pharisees saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, they said to his disciples, 'Why is he eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners?' And hearing this, Jesus said to them, 'It is not they who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners.'" So that's example number one. Example number two is going to be in Luke chapter 7. And I'll start reading in verse 36. "Now one of the Pharisees was requesting him dine with him, and he entered the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And there was a woman in the city who was a sinner, and when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster vial of perfume, and standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears, and kept wiping them with her hair, with the hair of her head, and kissing his feet, and anointing them with the perfume. Now when the Pharisees who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, If this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, and that she is a sinner. So here again, we see this woman come in, and she's wiping his feet. Now turn with me to John chapter 11. And there's just an interesting little comment here in John chapter 11 that I think gives us an insight into who this woman was who was that we read about in Luke 7. John chapter 11, verse 1. Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. And so we get this picture, and so it seems to me that the story in Luke 7 refers back to Mary here. So anyway, the point is that woman became one of Jesus' close friends. And he wasn't always looking in the place that you would expect to find a close friend. You think about a tax collector, he was a reject, right? He was someone who had turned on his own nation to collect taxes for the Roman Empire, and people didn't like tax collectors. They didn't like the sinners, because they thought if you get touched by a sinner, it's going to make you dirty too. And yet Jesus didn't consider those factors. And one of the things that I find really neat about that is Jesus found people who had the right heart, and he loved them more than he loved his reputation. I think that's kind of an interesting thought, is he didn't care what those Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes were going to say about him for the people he came in contact with. He loved people who loved God, who wanted to know him. And I think that's also a good pointer for us if we're talking about making friends. A lot of times, the people who are going to be some of your closest friends are going to be the ones you lead to Christ, are going to be the sick people who need a physician. And I'm not saying go out and become close to people who are happy in their sin. But what I am saying is if you find someone who wants freedom from that, and you teach them about Jesus, you're going to have a close friend there. In fact, just as an example of that, the man I did preacher training with converted my dad. And they were friends. They were good friends. And so, you know, it's just one of those things. When I talked to Hawthorne about that, he would talk highly of my dad, but that's because he converted him and brought him to Christ. And so you see that sort of connection. But that's somewhere you might find a friend. And so one of the reasons that it's, you know, one thing you can do is if you're helping people to come to Christ, you're also creating friends for yourself in that. Also, we see that Jesus became friends with followers of John. If you look in John 1, 35 through 45, you see that as well. He goes and meets James, and James goes and gets Andrew, and Andrew goes and gets Peter, and then they meet Philip, and then Philip goes and gets Nathanael, who is also known as Bartholomew. But Nathanael comes up, and he's a good man, and Jesus says, a man who with no deceit in his mouth, and he's like, how do you know me? And Jesus said, because I saw you when you were sitting under the fig tree before Philip came. And he's like, you are the Son of God. I mean, he was just a straightforward, honest man, and I really like him. I mean, he didn't mince words. He just said it how it was. And Jesus is like, because I said that, do you believe that I am he? He's like, you're going to see greater things than that. If this convinces you, then you're going to be real impressed. Anyway, you see Jesus, he went out and he looked for people who were genuine about serving God, who were genuine about knowing God, and that's who he chose for his friends. Let's go and take a look at 2 Timothy 2:22. I know I'm running out of time, but we'll catch this, and if we have to hold over a little bit till next week, we'll just go ahead and do that. 2 Timothy 2:22. Now flee from youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. And really, I think that's something we can all say of who do we team up with to go serve God and do right together? It's not those who are going to make you look good. It's not those who are going to say, oh, that's the best friend you could have chose. It's those who want to call on the Lord from a pure heart. And those are the people that we need to become close with and dedicate our and bring in close to our friendship. In John chapter 15:15, Jesus says, "No longer do I call you slaves, for the slave does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all the things I have heard from my Father I have made known to you." Something Jesus looked for in his close friends is he could share all his heart with them. Jesus said here, "I have given you everything my Father has given to me. I've shared all my heart with you. I've given everything precious to me you know about." And he felt like he could trust them with it. And in fact, there were people he didn't think he could trust with it. In Matthew 13:11, that's what he says is, "To you has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom, but this isn't for everyone." Not everyone is, but Jesus chose people that he could trust with his heart, with the share his heart with. So any thoughts and comments on that? Well, if not, then let's just go ahead and move on that. And John chapter 15, verse 16, it says, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you would go and bear fruit, that your fruit would remain, so that whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he may give to you." This is the last point, is Jesus chose his friends. He didn't just let his friends choose him. And sometimes there will be people who want to be close to you, but they're not the right sort of people that you want close to you. And so you may not want to make friends with that sort of person, but Jesus chose his friends, and he chose friends with certain qualities. One of the qualities, and this is just a verse I really appreciate, in John chapter 6, verse 66. Jesus was teaching some pretty hard stuff. And I'll start in verse 67. It says, so I'll start in 66. "As a result, many of the disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. So Jesus said to the 12, do you want to go away? You don't want to go away also, do you? And Simon Peter answered him, 'Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God.' And Jesus answered them, Did I myself not choose you, the 12, and yet one of you is a devil?" And so anyway, we see that Jesus chose his closest friends partly because they would stay with him even though some of the things he was saying was challenging. And in Luke chapter 22, something Jesus said about them, and then we'll go and wrap up with this verse. In 22 verse 28. Jesus says, "You are those who have stood by me in my trials, and just as my Father has granted me a kingdom, I grant you that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and you will sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel." But what Jesus says here is, "You are the ones who stood by me in my trials." So also that's another quality that Jesus chose in his friends, as someone who's going to stand by him in the hard times and also work towards the same goals. So as we look at this, as we look at what did Jesus do? How did he choose his friends, and what type of friends did he choose? He chose people who would reciprocate the same sort of love that he gave to them, that had the same goals and aspirations that he could trust to share his heart with, that he could that would stand by him in hard times. And so I just thought this was kind of an interesting study as to understanding, well, who did Jesus choose for his friends? Any other thoughts or comments before we wrap up? Richard? I would answer yes, but we don't have time to go over all of that right now, but I would say yes. Jesus was completely sincere, and so he didn't feign love. He loved completely. Let's go ahead and with that comment, let's go ahead and be dismissed.